Okay, well, counting Valerie, who will be joining us as the voice of God from above, we now have quorum. There are 8 of us of the 14, so there are 9 of us, because I can count. Regardless, we have enough people to start. So we shall. And I will begin by asking if there is approval of the agenda as we all have in front of us. Are there any issues with the agenda as it is? Hearing none. All right, we have a second on that.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Would you second the agenda so that we can get to the questions about the fair share program? Okay. Anyone opposed to approving the agenda? All right, agenda's approved. Next step is to take a look at the minutes that John provided from last meeting. And once again, John has provided a very thorough set of minutes. It was just like we were there. Okay, we can come back to that. All right, we have no members of the public in the room, so I presume that there will be no public comment. Might be tricky to do without members of the public here. In that case, we can just scurry right along to the informational updates. And John, I presume that you are the one who is providing
I am.
A lot of information on this.
Sure.
We're holding off a moment because Joseph has a few things that he wants to review, so... If anybody else has comments on the minutes, feel free to bring them up.
That's fine.
Also, because we do have Valerie on the phone tonight, I've just a reminder to please use your mics, otherwise we will sound like a murky blob to her. So if that's what you want, that's fine, but it would be nice if she can hear us.
Thanks.
So,
okay, so... I wanted to give you guys some updates on a couple things that were before the board last month because they have some rider-facing qualities, for lack of a better word, and just to sort of keep up with what Ms. Porter said when she was here, I guess 2 months ago, about sort of, you know, monitoring, making sure that you all know what the board is up to and that you know, that can inform opportunities for comment. So I was hoping to be able to show this on the screen, but I cannot figure out how to get the screen to work. So most everybody has paper in front of them, and I will try, especially for Pat's sake, to be as descriptive as possible when discussing this stuff. The first is the Fair Collection Modernization Program update. So as you may or may not remember, a couple years ago, Metro had what was referred to as the new electronic payment program in place, or undergoing a test of sorts with pay by pilot, with pay by phone and different smart cards and special fare gates and all that kind of stuff. And for various and sundry reasons, including that was a little bit, it was sort of determined that was perhaps ahead of its time, that was ended. Metro did not continue with this new payment program. However, that does not change the fact that our fare vending machines are old and clunky, that our fare gates are old, that our bus fare boxes are old and running into trouble, that certain technical parts of the bus fare boxes are no longer replaceable. That's about as technical as I can get with that. And that there are opportunities that, you know, a couple years in the world of technology is a long enough time that things have changed, and there may be some opportunities for better ways to serve our customers. So, That's I will turn up the volume. And I don't, is that better? That is much better. Okay. Sorry, I'll try and get closer to the mic. No, thank you. So this program is about extending the life of the bus fare boxes, which you shouldn't see much customer change, improving operations of the fare gates, which hopefully you won't notice much change. The goal is for it to be seamless. Maintaining our fare vending machines, which we'll get to in a moment, and then back-end stuff, which is not, not a direct rider concern. There's this graphic here about the strategic roadmap. I'm not sure that is worthy of much talking. So phase one is underway, involving bus fare boxes. As you might have seen, Metro is in development for a mobile payment app, which was announced back in April. It will allow you to manage your SmartTrip account from anywhere. Eventually, at some point in 2019, you'll be able to make mobile payments from your phone to our new fare gates, our new SmartTrip targets. And then we're also, so that's phase one. Phase two is installing new fare gates, also I think of customer interest is procuring what we call new vendors. Those huge bulky machines that you use right now to buy and reload your SmartTrip card, which were high tech in 1995, I think, when we deployed them, but just like your gateway computer, probably no longer the most user-friendly. I'm sorry? Vendor means machine in WMATA speak. So then the goal is to procure those in 2019 and 2020 and eventually install them as part of phase three in 2021. Let's see. There's not a great deal of interest about the new bus fare boxes. We expect them to work the same as the current ones do. The transition should be seamless. You will do the same thing as you do now on the bus. They will, as far as I know, they will still accept cash, yes. No, the bus fare boxes are on the bus. Okay, I'm not. That is not part of this plan. There are some potential changes down the road and they had talked a couple years ago about doing things. In fact, somebody came to the RAC. It's been several years now to talk about putting. Basically, things like those, like parking meters where you can charge up your SmartTrip card, or I believe like the circulator used to have. I don't know that that's moving forward, but I can certainly. Okay. Okay, I'll have to double check. I mean, I think the issue with the fare boxes and the buses is that certain hardware on them is failing, and it's not replaceable. They don't make it anymore. So, for buses that don't, especially for buses that aren't going to serve, BRT or super stops, then we'll need to update those. And Rebecca, I will check. I don't know that we're anticipating taking credit. When you say credit cards, you mean like taking credit cards directly? Yes. No. So adding value to your smart trip via a credit card on the bus? Okay.
Clarence, that's not necessarily true that it's going to be faster or slower, because every time I get on the bus, someone has put crumpled dollars into the fare machine, and they're attempting to, and it takes 5 years for them to do it, and then the bus driver has to take it from them, and then they, yeah, so that won't work.
Okay, I will have to check with staff. I think the goal is to allow people to manage their smart trip cards with a mobile app. So if you can load your smart trip card from your phone, then that may obviate the need to load it on the bus while there are, you know, people behind you or people waiting. But I'll check.
Yeah, because when you're checking that, as far as being able to use an app if you don't have an iPhone, you're
you need a smartphone. Yes.
Your low-income folks do not have smartphones. They will not have smartphones. They are a huge ridership on your buses, and to try and say that. I mean, you got to move forward with technology, but you got to hang back for the people that, you know, Mr. Dorsey was saying last month, we want to know why we're losing people. Well, if you continually make it harder and harder for low-income folks to use WMATA, that's part of the reason you're losing that ridership.
I mean, I don't think we're anticipating any current changes in functionality with the bus fare box.
You just said that the intent would have it all be done with a mobile app via your phone to upload your smart trip.
No, that would be an additional option.
Okay, as long
but
as additional
there
one,
is
right.
at this point, I'm not aware of any plans to eliminate the ability to add cash to your card at a metro station, or I mean, just as you can now.
Good. That's great.
But adding the ability to charge your smart chip card via a credit card, that's the thing that I don't like. That add-on that is what I don't know about. So, right. You'd have to go to a rail station and use the existing fare vendor. I don't know if you want to recognize Mr. Meissner with the question or.
John, as to the mobile app and credit card functionality. We had a rider last year, very irate about the delay in the credit card payment she made posting to her Smart Trip account. Is the talk, at least in having the software, be relatively instantaneous so we won't have issues like that? And if you want to read about what happened, it's on our Facebook page. So would it be instantaneous, like using the smart chip card with the existing vending machines?
I will have to ask staff. The issue that this person had was that she loaded the card. She loaded the card from home.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Online. At a computer.
Online, Joe? I mean,
this
is kind of hearsay because I wasn't there with her,
obviously. She forgot her wallet at home, and so she left her smart trip card there also and her wallet. But she loaded a funds through her phone using her credit card number, I guess that she memorized or something, but it wasn't able to instantaneously load onto the smart trip card, or just she wasn't able to leave. I think she might have purchased a new smart trip card and loaded onto that. I don't know exactly what happened.
Right.
So that's the part.
Clarence, and we want to mitigate that from happening to future riders. Yes, I think so. Or
yeah.
She was told
at
that.
At least 24, yeah.
Go for it.
Clarence, you need to use a mic so that everybody and Val on the phone can hear you. Thanks.
Yeah. No, the Metro's like guiding philosophy is to push riders to setting up auto reload on their accounts, which would go instantaneously rather than doing it on the phone. I do agree it would make more sense that, and conceivably once they move over to the smart the smartphone, once you add it onto your phone, it'll automatically be reflected on your account. It's just a matter of how they do. I'm assuming it's like a daily or whatever scheduled upload of any transactions that were made and then pushed onto the carts.
Right. I will have to ask the technical staff about that, especially given that, you know, like I know that now sometimes some of the delay is like, for example, you know, getting the information to the bus. You know, the buses, they don't get their fare boxes. You know, they're not continuously connected to the network. So, you know, sometimes there's a delay if you add funds that way or to recognize it there. But just because most of the functions on the information about your account is stored on the card. So I will ask about what that would mean in terms of changes for customers. So
I have another question relating to the app, not specifically about fare payments though. So I'm looking on page 16 and 43, and sort of it lists the features including trip planning, wayfinding, fare payment. Is there any talk about also including either a real-time train map or some sort of updates? I think that's been a desire that I've heard from a lot of riders. And even though there are apps out there that use Metro's existing data to do that, you know, it might be helpful to have that built into the app if it's being built already. So do you know if there's talk about that, or is that a possibility?
I will double-check. I'm going to have to say I assume so, given that we already do real-time, you know, we do real-time stuff on our mobile pages.
We launched that recently, but I don't know if it's going to be part of the app, so that's a good question.
Right. I mean, well, yeah, it's been...
Like live train thing or whatever.
Right, a live map.
Also, right.
I think it would be low-hanging fruit that would make the app a lot more functional.
Right. I think I understand that there are other sort of non-official apps that have that information, but this would be sort of an official Metro developed app that would then also incorporate fare payment and such. I will confirm. The next, and now we're on to page 10, is fare gate modernization. So our fare gates are also old. We will be procuring new fare gates with deployment beginning sometime in June of 2019, approximately spring of 2019. This timetable can slip. I don't know, Pat may remember, I know that the AAC provided, and the RAC, provided a great deal of input on fare gates. It's been a minute, it's been probably several years now. When they were looking at fare gate replacement, and I think this would incorporate that same feedback. I'll shush Pat if you want to say anything.
No, I was just agreeing with you, John. We, you know, I think there was pretty good input from actually both groups, RAC and AAC on that. Yeah.
So the plan now is to either continue with the existing setup, which they call biparting leaves, or saloon-style barriers, which are a little bit higher. They look like, I don't know if, I'm trying to think of places that use them that people may have been. I know they use them in Boston. Like no, New York has
airports, right?
Turnstiles. They're like, yeah, they're clear glass, and they're, yeah, the one, yes, correct. Like the one that we haven't, so check out the one in the lobby that, so it would be one of those two. I know that when this whole fare gate thing was going around several years ago, there was a thought to go to turnstiles like they have in New York where you push through, and that people did not like that. So we will not be doing that. Let's see. The next stuff is about the bus fare boxes, and that is, again, you know, the goal is for that change to be seamless. And then the next and last, the last item is probably the most customer impactful, is replacement of fare vendors. Anyone who has used or tried to, you know, anyone who's used our fare vending machines here knows that they're not rider friendly, and I can tell you as someone who has worked at a lot of stations, they are especially unfriendly for people who are not familiar with, who are either not familiar with the area, don't ride the Metro very often, do not speak English as their first language, are not intimately familiar with technology from the mid-1990s. All of those things, you know, people that don't have a brick phone or a flip phone in their pocket have a hard time with them. So as you can see here from some of the examples, we were looking at options for, I think, a little bit more user-friendly fare vendor machines. Development of those will start in 2019. So I would suggest that this is something that the RAC put a pin in terms of, you know, advocating to provide input in terms of functionality and those kind of things.
Is there, as part of these conversations, work about making sure that the fare vendors behind the gate are also like connected and possibly able to do use credit cards? Because I know currently right now, the exit fares.
So this would be essentially to add credit card functionality to the ad fare machines. I don't know. Again, they're not going to be starting the requirement, the development until 2019. So I think it might be too soon to know the answer to that yet. I can ask. But I think that, you know, I think that that would come out in the development process. Obviously, there's credit card functionality on the machines that are outside the gates now, and that would certainly remain. So credit card functionality for exit fare.
Do you know if refunds?
I have a question regarding the fare gate. Because here it says we have approximately 900 aisles, regular and ADA. We're going to be replacing them all. Are we going to replace them the same thing, regular and ADA, or are they all going to be ADA? Can they all be wide enough to be ADA or not?
I don't believe so, because I think you would not have enough space. If you're doing a one-for-one gate-to-gate replacement, an ADA gate is maybe not quite twice as wide as a regular fare gate. So I think it would, I expect that the ratio of non-ADA and ADA gates will remain the same. Right. I mean, they're usually...
Because there's only one per station, at least. In Pentagon and Pentagon City, there's only one ADA per station.
Right, and they're only one way, and they take a little longer to open. So,
At least increase the ADA.
Okay. I mean, again, something I'll have to ask, just because, it bumps up against space considerations. You know, if you have six fare gates now and one of them is ADA, you'll go down to five fare gates with two ADA. So I don't know what the
So I know we talked earlier about that lady who was upset because she left her money at home or whatever. In terms of the refunds, will refunds be also more, timely? Especially with the rush hour promise that's going on. I know that's a pilot, but riders can, wait a few days before they get any cash back or whatever if they take advantage of the 15-minute grace period, or, yeah, if there was that rush hour promise. So are there any plans for the refunds to be more timely also? And also, in late 2017, there WMATA made changes to its transit data terms of service, and API license fees and all of that. I'm glad, actually, that WMATA is making its own official app. I know a lot of developers might not be because it's competition, but I think it's good competition, like, to have more people in the ecosystem. But does WMATA have a policy, or what's this WMATA's position on making data more freely accessible to these developers that protects PII, that makes it more accessible so that developers could create services and products that are also useful?
So I don't know that that part was – I don't know that either of those things were part of this particular update. I don't think that we're not anticipating – again, I'll ask, but I don't think we're anticipating any changes to the query process that identifies and refunds customers for the rush hour promise. If I remember correctly, it was authorized as a – it was authorized for 1 year, and, you know, where we'll be when this stuff hits the street, I don't know.
Yeah. Or like the 15-minute grace period. Whenever there's a refund, I guess, that might.
Okay. Yeah. So will this allow?
Or like how fast will it be for a refund or, yeah.
Right, because, I mean, my understanding, and I've never experienced it, but that you're supposed to get the rush hour promise thing they download the data that night and identify it, and
exactly.
You're supposed to get a refund. I believe the process works the same for the 15-minute grace period, so I'll ask if this would change that such
it
that it would.
Or whatever. Like, if they could get it even instantaneously, that'd be awesome, but I don't know if that's like a little bit too much. But, yeah,
okay.
And also that the developers, like, if WMATA's planning to be more open and let other people play with WMATA in the sandbox.
No.
Okay.
And I guess
so,
WMATA isn't going to write back to us, right, about those 12 questions that we sent back in November.
So that is fair payment. It affects everybody. So, I guess stay tuned for opportunities for input and, hopefully some positive changes in terms of the customer experience.
Or like even incorporating feedback into it, like Uber does or Lyft with the 5-star rating system. If you use the app, if you could. You never know. I mean, we're the only system, one of the few, I think might be only where we tap in, tap out, and I think it'll be a powerful feedback mechanism if we do have something like that. But that's just my 2 cents.
One other question, John.
Sure.
Regarding the development of the new machines, the new whatever the
fair vendors.
Vendors, you know, you stated some of the issues that we have problems with, that the people that have the issues are people that are not knowledgeable of the system, and et cetera, et cetera. Are these kind of things improvements that we hope to incorporate in the system?
What?
You said that some of the issues that in the are the people that cannot use it as easily as we had.
Right.
Hoped are people that are not knowledgeable with the system.
Right. In terms of you have to know exactly where you're going. You have to know. You have to look at that.
Basically, the tourists.
Chart.
The people that have never
right.
used it before.
You have to, you have to sort of figure out for yourself, am I traveling peak, am I traveling off peak, where am I going, do I want to buy
exactly.
a pass?
But is this kind of information going to be added to the, hopefully,
Yes. I mean, I think
it's the purpose, like, another, that you can have a choice of have the information in another language, or, you know, like you said also that there's some people that if they don't speak English, then, you know.
Yes, that is. That is part of the upgrade. I mean, if you go, I guess I'm most familiar with New York, but it's not, you know, it's certainly, Well, the vending machines are certainly an upgrade. They're, I mean, at least in terms of their functionality in other languages and their ability to, you know, sort of guide you a little bit more than our A, B, and C buttons can guide you on the current fare vendors. So I think, Lorraine, to answer your question, yes. You know, this would allow for sort of more decision points or more information to be displayed graphically, rather than the you know, the ABC digital display that's out there now. So.
Yeah. Actually, somewhat similar to Lorraine's point, do you know, or perhaps could you suggest there to be an option for the past products and past options to be more easily visible on whatever system is designed? I've definitely gotten a lot of questions from people who didn't even know that these past options were out there at different price points, and I think largely that stems from the fact that it's difficult to find it on the machine and to actually understand what it is.
Right, and we don't, we do not currently sell, the only past products that we sell on the current fare vendors are the rail passes.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's just the two, the what we call the monthly fast pass. I don't even know if we still use the names, but basically that allows you to take a max fare trip and then the short trip pass.
Right.
We don't sell any of the select passes. You have to buy those online.
Right.
So.
Do you think that opening that up is something that would be feasible?
I think it would be certainly more likely than trying to, because I just don't think the current vending machines have that functionality.
Yeah.
So.
Again, I think that's one of those easy wins that, yeah.
Right.
A monthly pass, yeah, uh-huh. Right. Weekly passes.
So. Questions that I'll have to take back to staff and ask on your behalf. The next is probably less exciting in terms of what's going on, but I did want to let you know that there are going to be some changes coming to the rail station as part of the Fair Share program. We had a pilot that you may have seen at two stations here at Gallery Place. If you've noticed the box in front of the swing gate, and then also at Fort Totten. I'm sorry. Okay. You know, currently our emergency swing gates are unsecured, which is, I think, different than a lot of transit systems. We piloted a couple different options for securing those swing gates, and basically found that securing the swing gate, and if you see on page 27, securing the swing gate with a push-to-open bar and an alarm and an ability for the station manager to bypass, you know, to allow the gate to be opened, reduced people walking through the swing gate significantly. Unfortunately, I'm not able to show it on the screen, but the two pictures above are the before and after from Fort Totten, and it reduced the number of people walking through the swing gate by somewhere in the neighborhood of 90%. So part of that is ensuring that people are able to, one of the big issues we've had is with students and DC-1 cards, if their cards go negative, they're not able to get out. And one of the big issues with people using the swing gates have been from student riders. The board approved some changes this past month to the DC One Card program that will hopefully eliminate that. In a nutshell, right now, if you're a DC student and you travel outside of DC on your card goes negative and the system won't let you out until you bring it back up. A DC One card for student travel is similar to any other smart trip card. You can have a negative balance and get out of the system. Unfortunately, there have been issues with that in terms of students, traveling outside of the district, going negative on their cards, and then not being able to get out of the system. So the board approved some program changes for next year that will eliminate that issue and hopefully make it easier for students to just always be able to tap their card and not risk going negative, such that they won't be put in a position where the only way to get out of the station is to use the swing gate. And then that will need to go along with an education campaign of, getting students to tap their card just like every other rider. That's been one of the things that, we've moved further and further away from people flashing something at the station manager to get into and out of the system. Metro Access customers have a something they need to tap. Is that right, Pat? Our commuter rail folks that have passes that you used to be able to flash on the bus, now it's on a smart trip card, so you need to tap. So the goal of this program, in addition to securing the swing gates, is to make sure that everybody taps in and on the rail system taps out as appropriate, whether or not, so there's no, hopefully eliminates possibilities for confusion. So as you can see from the slide on page 28, this is going to hit every station in the system. There is a phased implementation schedule, most of which will be done within the next year, with the exception of those that require big changes that we're not going to make changes until we replace fare gates. So those are the stations, those are the phase five stations that you can see in sort of the dark red. I don't know if you all have noticed, I will admit, apparently my home station was supposed to be, the new gate was supposed to be installed in April. I'm not sure if that's happened because I'm installed in April. I guess what I'm saying is this update was made in early April, and I don't know if these updates are on schedule at this point. I just kind of do my zombie walk in and out of the station like I assume most of you do. We're on track to replace swing gates at all the stations throughout the system.
John, do you know why the updates and the phases are so intermittent throughout? I mean, they're all over the place.
That is a good question. I will have to go back and look. I don't know that it was completely random, but I also it may have to do with configuration. Like I know that if you look at phase four, all the stuff's over there. If you look at phase four, that includes elevator entrances that are separate from regular entrances, so stations like Tacoma, where the elevator entrance is completely separate from the entrance that if you're not using the elevator, you go through, and it pops out in a different place in the platform. So those are in the later phase because they're going to be more difficult because they have to add communications infrastructure to allow you to contact the station manager if you, you know, if you need to get out without setting up the alarm. I'm not sure the distinction between phase two and phase three, but they're both scheduled to be completed in FY 2018, which is only through June. So. That is really, that's the big takeaway. No, I mean, not unless you all have questions. I mean, this.
Turn it over to Rebecca.
Thank you. I have a lot of questions. And one is kind of overall about the policy regarding Metro pilot. Seems like they always, like Lamont always introduces things as a pilot, like the flight pass, which I love, by the way. And now it's not a pilot anymore, but I don't know when the conversion is like from a pilot to a non-pilot program. Seems like that's of interest to me because this fair share thing was a pilot. So where are the results that we can see and review to determine if the pilot should keep going, if it's cost effective, what the results are, how many people were arrested? I know I have a couple of clients who were assaulted and attacked because they had negative amounts on bus fare. And I know a lot of situations where people were treated very intensely because Gallery Place is my station. So I'm there every day, and multiple times a week I saw many people of color in a corner with multiple structures. And I was always concerned that I didn't realize the pilot was only at one of our stations. I was just there in the heat, I guess, and I got to see it every day.
Right, it was this and it was at Fort Totten, but yeah, just the two.
I think definitely there's things to talk about, like how the police respond to a situation and how station managers might behave. And I would totally agree that I have no doubt that there can be situations in which like racial stereotypes play into that. I do kind of have a question about the argument that it might not be cost effective. I mean, if someone is trying to get through the system without paying the share that they have on there, it's like a cost that's borne out on everyone else. And so trying to recoup that so that where in which everyone runs on the assumption that if you are going into the system, you will be paying for that system and not attempting to flash and get through the system like we have with some students have been doing or other people, that, you know, it would make the whole system more costly for everyone else.
Puts a business, a burden on the city. And so the data is there that says issue, and other jurisdictions have handled it better than D.C. But I think we, you know, D.C. can do better. And why can do better?
I'm not an expert on the subject at all, but it does seem to me that there might be two different subject matters happening here. One is the decriminalization of fare evasion, which is the illegal side. This program to me, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, but this program is not so much about either criminalizing or decriminalizing the fare evasion. It's not about the legal effects of fare evasion. It's about changing the fare gates so that it's harder for people to just walk out.
Right. It is providing less opportunities for fare evasion, I guess.
I was wondering for that, what is WMATA's position in terms of enforcement, that part? Like, what are the next steps? If someone is caught, you know, fare evading or whatever, what happens? Like, what does the station manager do, if anything? And also, for the students, for the DC-1 card, if they lose the card or something happens, like, how long does it take to get it replaced? Can they still use the system for free, or what happens?
So DC One Card Administration is done through DC Public Schools.
Yes.
I don't know how long it takes them to replace a card. I think that is part of the issue in terms of moving them away from DC One cards to quote-unquote regular Smart Trip cards, that would allow for quicker, easier replacement. How long it will take them to get a new card, I don't know.
Okay, and then in terms of the pop, yeah.
So, again, this program is to decrease opportunities for fare evasion, and I'm sorry. Remind me of the specific focus of your question.
Yeah, not that anyone cares, but I'm not necessarily against having these boxes or even like covering this gate or whatever, or putting this, just making it difficult for people to evade. But once someone does make the choice to fare evade or forgets to tap out, or they can't tap out and the station manager isn't there, so they decide to, okay, I don't see any station manager, I'm just gonna, you know, go because I have groceries and I don't know, it's just taking forever for the station manager because I don't know where he or she is. What happens when that he or she is caught? Like, does the station manager call the cops on them, or if a cop is nearby, does that officer arrest the individual or give him or her a fine? Like, what are the next steps after the rider has, you know, quote-unquote, fare evaded? Like, what happens to that individual? Because I'm just wondering if it's consistently applied, if it is or isn't. I don't think it is. But, like, I'm just wondering what the next steps are. What's WMATA's policy once a person has, you know, I mean, there, the boxes says what it is. It might be a $300 fine or whatever, but what actually happens? Because it seems like there is a policy on next steps. So what is that policy?
So I believe you're issued a citation, and I don't.
Okay.
I'd like to get this right, so I'd like to check.
Sure. Okay.
I don't believe that we remand people to any kind of custody unless there are other, unless they have other legal issues, other warrants, other things outstanding, so if you fare evade and you're apprehended, it seems like such a, anyway, you know, if you are, you know, if you're with the cops and they run your ID and find out that you have other warrants that necessitate you
Your ID,
you know, being taken in, then you know, then that's what happens. But for, I do not believe, and I will confirm, I do not believe that for solely fare evasion, you're taken into any kind of custody. You know, it is, I believe we have found that a disproportionate number of people that are cited or apprehended or whatever you want to call it for fare evasion have other, you know, outstanding
but it's like unrelated
criminal
to
charges.
Fare evasion, right?
Correct.
But still, okay.
I mean, but if you have, you know, if you have an outstanding warrant for something else and you are caught for fare evasion and that outstanding warrant requires that you be taken in, or if you are in possession of, you know, a handgun or whatever, you know, an illegal weapon, whatnot, then that, you know,
so
that comes
clear,
into
the
play.
The station manager doesn't call the cops or anything. What happens? I'm just making sure.
I know that the police handle fare evasion, whether or not the state they're summoned by the station manager,
okay,
or if they're already there.
Yeah, that's
I'm not sure the breakdown.
Fair. I mean, or I don't know if it's fair, but the station manager doesn't, you know, once that person's apprehended or caught, doesn't, as a result of WMATA policy, call the cops or anything like that?
Well, if they're apprehended or caught, the cops would already be there. Like, station, I'm not sure. I'm following. Station manager,
I mean,
station.
Whoever, okay, so if
so the another,
them, then they just go scot-free, pretty much, right?
I assume so. I mean, I,
so
you know,
what,
I don't.
I'm just confused, like, what happens to that individual? Like, yeah, sorry, what was.
I think I know the answer to the question.
Okay.
Right. You.
The person doesn't commit other crimes in connection with the fare evasion. They get a written citation. And they have
if the police is there, right?
I'm sorry.
If the police is there.
Well, they're the only ones we can
give. Yeah, they're the only ones that can give a citation.
Okay. So no one. So if like a kid decides to evade or whatever, and the station manager sees him doing that, the station manager doesn't stop that individual, right?
So I think part of the goal of,
I don't know if that's the policy. I don't know what actually happens. But sorry, John, what were you saying?
Part of the goal of this process and the process on the buses is to remove station managers sort of distance station managers and bus operators from fare enforcement.
Yeah.
If you may have noticed, like, for example, now when the bus doors open, there's an automatic voice that quotes you the fare,
yeah,
and
$2 for this bus.
Right, which takes the bus operator out of the equation in terms of, or hopefully does, to, you know, to get into an argument with a passenger who may, or you know, who may decide not to pay the fare or not pay the full fare or whatever. Now, along with that, there are and have been increased police presence on buses, and you know, if somebody evades the fare.
And is that in connection with this program?
Yes.
It is. Okay. So police are called in specifically like before, just to make sure that people don't fare evade, essentially, or?
Yes, we have, I mean, we have plainclothes officers on our buses, plainclothes and uniform officers on, not all of our buses,
okay,
but
and
on
then
our
WMATA
buses.
Policy currently, just to be clear, is not to, yeah, stop any individual or anything. The station managers or the bus drivers aren't supposed to stop individuals who fare evade. It's up to those plainclothes
So fare enforcement is the responsibility of the transit
just wondering where WMATA is. I understand.
Right.
Bob?
My guess is if you want to be a fare evader, you're probably better off going to Falls Church, because you'll probably be able to fare evade there without any plainclothes cops there. I suspect that WMATA, the transit police, go our station at stations where there is a high level of fare evasion, just like the Metro Police are in neighborhoods, overwhelmingly in neighborhoods where there is crime. But it is, you think that's a good way to proceed, people can discuss, but
just wondering in terms of the personnel, but you guys answered it. So.
Sutta and then Pat.
I wanted to say, first of all, I do share some of the concerns that Rebecca brought up. I think that we need to be conscientious of the impact this will have on low-income riders, on people of color. And also, I think people who I've actually seen on a daily basis get trapped in a system, you know, not realizing that, you know, they don't have the cash to exit, or that their fare cards go negative and end up having to literally beg other riders for money because there's no way of getting out. And I think, you know, erecting barriers to prevent those people from getting out in a timely manner is just not only inconvenient, but just really burdensome for the whole system and on station managers. I'd also like to sort of second the request for additional data, sort of pulling up an article from last year citing that there were about 15,000 citations for fare evasion in 2017. And sort of just going through rough mental math, that might save Metro $50,000 a year, sort of that the revenue that they, I guess, would have saved by catching these potential these fare evaders. I guess I question, in addition to some of the social costs, I question the, I guess, business necessity or justification. I mean, obviously, I believe that we should be encouraging people to pay their fair share and encouraging people not to fare evade, but I think going out of our way and ultimately spending a lot of money to reinforce these barriers, you know, might not be cost effective as well. So I just wanted to second that.
Okay. I don't know if this is feasible, but I think about what we do with cars and traffic and people and capturing the license plates and all that sort of thing, and people get automatically tickets for evasion of certain rules. I mean, can't something like this be automated so that it's tied to a smart trip card so that something could be triggered and a person just get a $50 fine? If they want to appeal, they can come down to Metro. Why all this manpower? Why all this confrontation? There should be an easier way to do it. Are we the only, you know, what are other transit properties doing with respect to fare evasion?
I'm not sure. I mean, so the evading the fare means you don't use your smart trip card, so I'm not sure how we could necessarily tie it to a smart trip card. And also the vast
in, though, if you get in.
Right, but also the vast majority of our smart trip cards are unregistered. You know, that is one of the things that you know, that is one of the things about the rush hour promise that I forget what the amount is, but it's I believe it's under 50% of our smart trip cards are unregistered, and we don't require you to register your smart trip card. So I guess I'm just not sure logistically, you know, how that would work.
Yeah, you're right.
The only other thing is to use facial recognition technology, and that's a whole other. So,
But I mean, maybe as we build the systems in the future more, maybe that then becomes one of the requirements of a system in the future, that you have some way to track people, making it useful to them, but also enforceable by WMATA without having to bring police officers and have the confrontation piece. It just seems kind of weird that we can do it for cars. Somebody didn't like that idea. All right, then.
I'm gonna
can't do it for transit systems. I just don't know if anyone else has come up with a better way to do it than, you know, the confrontation piece.
If you all could give me just 1 minute, I'm going to try and call Valerie back.
Just put the boxes up and just leave it as is. No need to get the police involved.
I had one experience in the fare evasion, because it affected me. This individual actually shoved me out of the way and got out with my fare, you know, two people with the same fare kind of situation. But guess what? There was a cop there, and he stopped him.
That's good.
And that was it. But I asked the cop, do you need me for anything? And he told me, I saw it, and we have it on film. That's all. That's all we need. So I don't know, because then the guy started, no, because he was in a hurry because his bus and, you know. Well, you know, I think, because I remember that the cop was telling him, you know, signaling. I didn't hear the conversation, but he kept signaling. I think that he made him go back in and exit from the, go to the line again and exit. Obviously, he missed his bus. But the thing was that the cop, what he told me was, I saw it, and it's, and we have it on video. So that's, you know, all they needed.
That was it. I mean,
so
that's gracious of that cop, but I don't know if it was right or wrong or whatever. It's his choice.
So just to follow up on a question about, in terms of, sorry. So just to follow up in terms of a question on sort of evaluation and metrics and cost effectiveness, the total, I believe it's going to be $3 million for at least phases 2 and 3 of this program. And I'll have to double check, but I want to say it's estimated we lose approximately $24 million a year in fare evasion. So.
But does this help with the fare evasion?
Right. So there was a 90%.
Does it really? I don't see the evidence. Oh, no. I would assume that it would, but I'm just wondering if the data bears that out.
Yes, the data on the pilot project has indicated that there's a 90% reduction in fare evasion.
At these pilot stations.
Okay, good.
So if you get rid of, you know, I'll have to check, because I'm not sure if the $24 million, it's not in here. I know I want to make sure that it's right, but, you know, spending approximately $3 million on this versus the annual cost of, at least the annual lost revenue of fare evasion, not getting to the other costs of enforcement and those kind of things.
I know a couple of years ago we went through this big fight, particularly disability community, where they locked the emergency gates, and that was, I think we have a policy in place now not to lock those, and so I just commend WMATA for that. I think that's good, and we certainly don't need to go back to those kind of days. And one of the things we looked at was fare evasion was one of the issues, but it caused a lot of other issues. As long as we keep and don't lock those emergency gates, I think we're in good shape.
Right. I mean, they'll be able to be opened. They are alarmed. So they're not locked per se, but you will know when it is opened.
One final little question for you about this program, the Fair Share program. Is it F-A-I-R or F-A-R-E? Because it is spelled multiple ways in the presentation.
It could be, I believe it is F-A-I-R.
That is the more common spelling in the presentation. So.
Right. That was my question, but I didn't want to call anything out. It's the first and the second slide have different Fair Shares. Or different fares. Yeah. It should be fair share. fair share.
I'm not okay. Yeah, the only way I see it spelled is F-A-I-R. So.
The second slide has.
Yeah, first and second slide. The cover. The, and also on the agenda.
Okay. Thanks.
Question.
Which one is it?
In an emergency, how easy is it to unlock these gates?
So it is a. They're not locked. It is like a push door.
Just like a okay.
An alarm goes
up. Right. There will be, and I can ask, but I believe that there will be an alarm that will go off. You know, whether or not the station manager has the ability to turn that alarm off in an emergency situation, though there are probably other things that he or she will want to be doing if there is an actual emergency. So.
Page 27, I think.
questions for you will be about the U-Pass program. Yes.
This is the public report, yes. There's a narrative in it. I can send you the link. I didn't include it here because I didn't realize it contained some additional data. But the 90% figure and the cost and that kind of stuff is also included with this that we put on the web. So I'll send that link around. Those are not taken. I'm just going to double check.
Well, like, are the costs itemized by any chance by, like, broad categories or anything? The $3 million or $2 million cost, or I don't know how much.
So it is $65,000. So in terms of itemized, this is about securing the swing gates. So it is $65,000 a swing gate, $1.2 million for phase two, and $1.4 for phase two, and $1.6 for phase three. Correct. Right. I mean, those are, so some of those are, I guess you could call sunk cost. I mean, we already have police out there. And, you know, I think one of the goals of this is that if you reduce the opportunity for fare evasion and thereby reduce fare evasion, you reduce the amount of conflicts and need for police to become involved in this.
But didn't you say earlier that you guys do call in police in advance to, like...
Police are in the system.
Yeah, that I know, but I'm wondering, because earlier I asked, hey, are police officers called in advance to make sure that there is no fare evasion, and I thought I heard yes.
Maybe I misunderstood your question. We have police in the system on buses and on trains. So I guess you would say that would be in advance. We don't call people. We don't. I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah,
we don't say, hey, we think people are going to fare evade. I mean, I don't know that it works exactly that way.
Okay. So there were no extra police officers dedicated solely for this program or, you know, in anticipation that more people, that they would have to catch people because of this program. Anything? Yeah, that's why I'm asking a question. Like,
well, right, but I mean, they've been there prior to this program.
So just.
I mean, as somebody who as.
So my question previously was: were there any resources or personnel, specifically police officers, that were dedicated or mainly dedicated or brought in for a presumption of any kind that there would be used to apprehend or any people that might fare evade?
I'm gonna have to look. I'm not gonna answer that now because I'm not exactly sure.
I'm just wondering if more police officers were brought on board because of this.
So I'm not sure. I was with you up until the last part.
Thank you.
I will. I can ask. I don't. Again, the pilot was about securing the swing gates, and I think the goal is to avoid opportunities and to limit opportunities for these kind of concentrations if you don't have the opportunity to fare evade and to reduce the instances of fare evasion. So the last one, I'll keep it brief, just because I know it is of interest to the board, or I'm sorry, to the RAC. Metro has approved permanent adoption of what is called the University Pass Program. This allows participating full-time students at participating colleges and universities to have unlimited rail and bus service, Metro Rail and Metro Bus service. A pass that allows for unlimited Metro Rail and Metro Bus rides, which is included as part of their student fees. One of the
unlimited rides throughout the entire system.
Correct.
Like the DC One pass.
Nope. Wherever we go. You're welcome. It is what I mean. This is no secret. The trick is one that if you look on slide 8, page 39. More, and this did not show up very well in black and white, so I'll try and explain, that 60% of UPATS riders are riding off-peak versus it's sort of an inverse of the rest of the system, is that most of our ridership occurs during the two peak periods, about 60%. This, only 40%. So essentially what these students are doing is filling seats that would otherwise go empty. So they are a little bit, there are more, they ride rail at a higher rate than our regular customers in terms of per trips, and we have, especially off peak, we have a lot more capacity on the rail system that, you know, we don't have to, whereas it's a lot, you get to a point a lot more quickly where you need to add a bus or schedule buses more frequently. When you bump up against a smaller number of customers, with Metro Rail, we have, especially off-peak, a lot of space on our empty trains. There are several universities you can see that participate in the pilot. I know that we're working. I know that we're working with other universities in the area to try and get them on board. Some of them, you know, like I know that. The University of the District of Columbia, I believe, declined to participate because this is it's a program for full-time students, and the University of UDC's full-time student population is not, proportionally not robust, you know, and I think some other places just it didn't exactly make sense for them. I know that they're also looking right now. Right now, this is not in effect on non-metro operated transit systems, which is something that we are looking to expand to. So, for example, if you have a U-Pass, it will not work on a ride-on bus. But that is something that we are looking to expand, you know, as appropriate or as possible. You know, Montgomery College students, I think, can already ride on for free, so it may not be of great use to them, but certainly anything that makes it more convenient. The sort of trick with this, for lack of a better word, is that this is every student, regardless of whether or not they take advantage of the U-Pass, is charged for the U-Pass. So this is how we're able to sort of, you know, lose a little bit of money on each rider, but make it up on volume. It's a part of your student fee. And one of the conditions, one of the ways that we make this work is that everybody has to participate. So I think that has been some of the reason that some schools have not participated is they didn't want to for students to participate that wouldn't get, that wouldn't see a benefit. So that's one of the challenges, but.
All right.
That's really it.
Should we start the question period?
If you guys have questions, sure, I don't.
Okay, then I will go Sitsa, Will, Bob, Joseph, Rebecca.
Okay, I'm a little confused. This is great, very helpful information, thank you. I'm a little confused by page 10 or slide 41, or page 41. I was hoping you could clarify, most of these universities are not in the DC region.
Right, but they have Washington programs.
Yeah. Oh, okay, all right. So, I didn't
so a lot of schools, you know, for, like when I was in college, I spent a semester here, and so then you'd participate in that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
They have, like, campuses here also. Like,
yeah, or they have campuses they have here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which, you know, which are which, but yeah, okay.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
And I'm not, I'm also not sure, and you know, if, I don't believe, like, for example, Boston University, I think the fee that we charge is based on the size of their population. Here, we're not charging every student, we're not charging every student in Boston a fee to, right, a fee to ride the Metro. But.
Okay. Then next is Will.
You didn't cut this off, did you? No, this is quick. Who developed this program?
You know, I don't know who developed the first one. It's, as you can see from the lovely graphic on page 36, that it's been around. Similar programs to this are in place all across the country. So I can go back and look at the materials from March of 2016 when we authorized this pilot to see, you know, I think it was just somebody realized that, hey, there are, you know, one, we have extra capacity, two, there are a lot of students in the D.C. area. You know, I know that I believe, and I don't know that if this is going to be, I'll have to look, but for example, our CFO used to work for the Chicago Transit Authority, and I know they have a fairly robust system there with all the universities in Chicago, and I think that I think part of it was that he thought that this could be a good fit. But I will see if I can get any more background for you. So they might. I mean, that's sort of the trade-off. And again, I probably should have provided the really dense narrative. Let me see if I can pull it up, because I think that they did some calculations in terms of like, I know American University is a participant, and they've seen a significant bump in bus routes around American University that has offset the cost. I'm just looking at the, okay. So it has generated over 2 million trips, and just look in here, sorry. I thought we had done some kind of metric in terms of ridership increase.
Let me ask a question another way, John.
Sure.
If the program didn't charge every student at a university, whether they rolled the system or not, the fee, which they do, right?
Right, so it's included in your student fee, so everybody is charged. That's correct. Correct. And I will tell you that the UPass, what Metro charges right now is $1 a student a day. So that math, you know, has somehow worked in terms of participation, and you know, it's the analysis has shown that it is revenue positive. I mean, that, you know, that's one of the arguments for you know, greater passes, is that, you know, if somebody pays up front and yes. Anyway.
Kind of like everybody who buys a gym membership. Okay, then we've got Joseph, Rebecca, Lorraine, and Clarence.
I know that online students and part-time students who paid a student fee at their respective universities they're not eligible for this program, and I was wondering if there was any way to, I guess, remedy that. And another part was, someone from Marymount University, so, like, I posted the universities that were added in the past year or whatever on Twitter, and someone reached out, student in student government, said, oh, I want to set this up in my campus or whatever, and so I connected her to WMATA. But is there any upfront information that such enterprising students can find on the WMATA website to do, you know, to make it easier for them to sign up? Because I'm sure there are university students who want this.
So I think it's something that needs to be done through their, I mean, their administration has to,
transportation,
right, I mean, their administration has to agree to include this as part of their student fees.
Yeah. But so, like, you know, normally there's some, like, student advocacy or student government that, you know, endorses this to happen, and then administration then gets involved, and there's, like, a whole process that gets involved. But if students don't want it or don't indicate their interest, then it's harder for administration to, you know, put this student fee for all the students when the students haven't indicated.
Right.
So,
I mean,
so
let me.
It'd be helpful if there can be, like, a starter kit or something for the students to, you know, get started or indicate to administrators that they're interested.
There is a page, and if I could get the screen to work, but if you go to WMATA.com/fairs/UPass,
yeah, I'm on.
So
it's meaning, like, contact this.
Right. How do I get UPass on my campus? And it talks about what are the benefits,
yeah,
and then it has a link, you know, to email that they can,
yeah,
they can work with you. That's
for Carly or the mysterious individual that I shall not name. But yeah, so yeah. I'm just, but then, you know, I don't know what happened afterwards.
Right. I mean, that sort of is an internal university process.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we,
yeah,
have, you know, we get them the information about what is involved.
It seems like you have to contact this person in order to even get any information that's above and beyond what's, you know, listed in this webpage, which is fine. But I'm just wondering if there are any other things, like instructions on what. Yeah, like how, like, if you would need administrator signatures, like who you would need. Or
no, but I think if you're going to get that deep into the process, you probably want somebody involved with it as well. I don't know that you, you can do that all on autopilot.
Sorry, kid.
So.
Okay.
It is not. It only covers Metro Bus and Metro Rail.
Okay. Oh, so. And I was wondering why the online and part-time students are not covered if they paid a student fee. Because that was my first question. Because according to the FAQs on this program,
so,
it says they're not eligible for this.
Right. I believe if you are not a full-time student,
or you could be a full-time student, or for the part-time students, that might be the case. But, I mean, they still pay the fee, but for the online students that may be full-time, they still can't participate, so. Or they could be, I mean, they might want to go to campus, or for counseling or some other things. Like, I don't know why. If they're paying the fee, why can't they participate?
So, again, not to give away the store.
Sorry?
I said not to give away the store, but part of the way that the UPass works is that
not everyone uses it.
Not everyone uses it. Yeah. Presumably, if you're a part-time student, it is because you are doing something else full-time. And the UPass would not work if it were designed to, if you're a part-time student and working full-time, to cover your full-time commuting costs. And there are not, there's no way to restrict this to say, you know, you can only use it for trips to school.
But it still doesn't make sense because the part-time students have to pay the student fee. That's just the same. Like, if that were the case, and in most universities it is, if you're enrolled or registered, you have to still pay the student fee.
But is the student, I mean, and again, this is something I'll admit my ignorance here, is the student fee for a part-time student the same as the student fee for a full-time student?
So. I mean, it may vary, but it depends on the, but, okay, so I grant that part-time might be a little bit more different, but in terms of the online student who wants to go to university or things like that, like, I don't see why they're not eligible. If they're a full-time online student, why can't they take advantage of it? Particularly if, and as a hypothetical, like, it's a granted, but it's, you know, the student fee, they're paying that, so why can't they be eligible?
Because they usually don't pay the student fee. The online programs, as it explains here, online programs have separate
usually,
student
fees. But I used to be an online program, too,
well,
for
but
full-time.
We're talking about the programs, the schools that are involved in this particular program, not all schools and all fee structures throughout the country. Specifically, we're
I know
talking
that.
About American, which
no,
is the
no,
first
I'm
only
talking about universities that want to get on board into this program for UPass. If they did have online students that were full-time, that did pay, and I know there's a lot of conditions there, but if it was a full-time program and online students paid the same fees as regular students, why wouldn't they be eligible? Like, can't I know that, but that's regardless. No, okay. I'm just trying to advocate for those riders or those students who might want to participate in this program and they don't get to because they're an online full-time student that. I mean, it's a small population anyway. It's not as though this is like millions of students. So all I'm saying is they should be eligible whether or not they partake in it. That's different. But I don't see why. That's my opinion, so I'm not looking for an argument. Yeah. I understand.
It would be like this.
The more people who participate, the more it is.
I could then enroll in one class at UDC as a part-time program, and then I would still go to Georgetown, and whereas I would pay $3 every day to go to work, I would only be paying $1.
Yeah.
And then everyone could start just
that
enrolling into one like
that
one.
Understand. However, if the student fee is like $500 and you're paying that student fee, you should be able to take advantage of this program if you're paying just as much as any other student for this. I mean,
I think a lot of that will come down to the particular agreement that any given university makes with WMATA. I don't think that's WMATA's policy. I think it's the school's policy when they're making the agreement.
But that's not necessarily the case, though, because WMATA specifically says on this FAQ.
Joe.
Okay, I'm just saying.
Lorraine.
Okay, I have a question on this price at $1 a day per student. Does this only work on a daily basis, or can I buy, you know, it for X amount of time?
So I believe student fees are usually administered per semester. So we charge the school, if your semester is 100 days, we charge you 100 times the number, $100 times the number of students that you have. The UPass is semester to semester, right? So it, No, it does not only work in a school day. It works calendar days. So it works, I mean, that's how we get these, you know, again, students riding off peak, and which includes, you know, weekends, but it is calendar days, and it is administered on a semester to semester basis. So, like, one of the things that we found that participation is lower in the spring semester because there are, you know, less students or people are abroad or whatever, but it's an upfront charge. It's not like you get, you know, it's not like you put a dollar on your SmartTrip card every day. Okay. Yeah.
Clarence, a question?
So I know that I know that there has been some disagreement between the if you look in copies of, I think it's the Eagle, in terms of the students voted for the for inclusion in the UPass program, but it has not been implemented by the administration. So I think there's a that's something that they need to work out. And I don't know about Georgetown. I think we're trying, but I think it depends on the nature of the nature of the campus, right? Like Georgetown has its own bus system, so it may not be as useful. Whereas like American, the only place you, I think if I remember correctly, like the only place you can get on the AU bus is to a metro station, and then you're sort of, you know, then hey, you got to ride the metro. So it makes more sense for them, you know. And I think somebody had said, like for example, the University of Maryland obviously is a huge population that we're trying to target, and but they're, you know, given where the school is, and given that it has, I mean, it also runs its own bus system, you know, that there was limited utility for a 7-day-a-week UPass, because students aren't going that far during the week, but may, you know, it's something they may be interested in, like
really?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, to allow them to get into the city. Whether or not that's a possibility, I just don't know. But so, like snowflakes, every school is different.
Cisa has put his name tag down, but you're next on my list if you
had no, he had his question already.
And then Bob, who is done.
Okay. Round.
I had a question. How much money does Metro make net positive from this program?
So let me find it. I think it was.
I mean, I support the program, but like, it seems like.
So it's generated over 2 million trips and $5.4 million in revenue since 2016. This year, and again, I'll send you all the link to these presentations because it has a little bit more in terms of text. I didn't include the text. For FY 2018, so just for this year, starting in July, we've earned it's brought in about $2.4 million.
Why can't you guys broaden the access?
So since it's been since it's been introduced, it's been over 2 million trips. That's been since whenever it was March of 2016, or whenever the, you know, whenever the pilot started. Right. It's growing. So since August 2016 was the first launch. So it's been 2 million trips since then.
Valerie, are you still on mute?
Yes, I'm still on mute. Am I off mute now?
Okay.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Well, that was quite a bit. That was.
I know. I feel like I was not anticipating to force you guys to listen to me talk for quite so long.
Well, that was an hour and 40 minutes of information that you just provided to us.
Wow.
So we appreciate it. Valerie didn't. Valerie's done.
Valerie apparently did not. I'm going to try and call her back one last time. I apologize that that's so loud.
While he's calling, just some quick mental math. If we added all the prospective schools, that would be 160,000 students. And if every school, let's say, contributed a dollar a day for 200 days, that's already $30 to $40 million. So we're looking at some big revenue potential.
Not bad mental math there.
So no, sorry. Not that mental math. I'm with the help of actually my iPhone calculator. So not fully forthright, but. Sorry.
Right, they are not current participants in the program.
Nor is Howard.
Howard.
But Catholic, Gallaudet, well, they're listed as under perspective, so they may be coming.
Right, I mean, we're only a couple years in, but.
So good on American for being our guinea pig school.
They were the ones who, they really pushed this. I don't know, one of, a former RAC member was an AU student, and I don't know how, like, if he helped spark this idea, but, the American really did sort of bring this to the fore, and apparently they were in a position where it worked out really well for them. So.
Okay. Well, going backwards in the agenda ever so slightly to the minutes. At this point, I'm wondering if we have a motion to approve the minutes. Once we get a second.
Okay. But like afterwards, you get to amend.
Yes.
I second.
Second. Or you guys already seconded, so.
Who moved it?
So, any discussion?
Yes. For page three, Mr. So these are parts where I'm, okay. So where it says Mr. Sa, the last sentence, actually maybe not that one. Page five. Page five. So the second paragraph, Mr. Suss stated that these kinds of ridership considerations were likely already taken into account. So Mr. Suss, instead of asked, has stated that these kinds of ridership considerations were likely already taken into account.
That were likely.
And then the last, page seven. Sorry for all these edits. I just want to make sure I'm. So in that first sentence, or the second sentence of that page, Mr. Sun noted that, blah, blah, that there shouldn't really be any other options for staff to pursue. Not that there aren't any, but that there shouldn't really be. And then, far the bottom, this is the last two, Mr. Sun stated that there might be a business case. And then, by which if a certain number of commitments or paid reservations were made to cover the cost. Thank you, John.
Sure. All right.
Okay. Any other amendments to the minutes? Yvette?
So I will defer to however you all want it. A long time ago, I stopped affirmatively recording people absent because some people said they felt shamed by it. This was before y'all, frankly. So I was like, you know what, if this is a record of the meeting, the meeting was the people that are here, so if it's all right, I'm leaving it off. If you want me to put it on, I'm happy to, but
it's fine by me to leave it off.
Okay.
Any other comments? All right, all in favor of approving the minutes as amended?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? One abstention.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's
specific there. Okay. Then the last thing that we can discuss in the remaining few minutes that we've got, we are currently. Yes, Ethan.
I was just gonna ask if
you sure. We're open to public comment if you would like.
Hey, could Ms. Harris, could you just come up to the mic? That way we can record you. I mean, in terms of capture what you say, and if we need to, you know.
My name is Rosalina Harris, and I live in Warford near Fort Totten Station. I ride the bus. I have to get the bus early in the morning. My question is, first of all, how do Metro go about adjusting schedule when they do make adjustments they follow the ridership to know which bus they need to make a slight adjustment to. For example, I have to be to work at 6 a.m. I have to be at my desk at 6 a.m. I get the bus, the E4 bus, going to Friendship Heights at Missouri Avenue and 2nd Street Northwest. If that bus is not there by 4:56, by the time it gets to Friendship Heights, I miss the local Berlin bus to get me to the Bethesda station on time so I can be at my desk at 6 a.m. Some of the drivers, I guess they get used to customers who ride the bus a lot and, okay, I'll leave a few minutes early from my beginning point. I'm very sure they probably shouldn't do that, but they do. But if they take vacation or the day they out call out sick or not driving, it delays me from getting to my work location on time.
So, I'm sorry, you get on the bus at Missouri and 2nd? Mm-hmm. At what time is it, about what time is it scheduled to be there?
4:56. If that bus comes 4:57, 4:58, by the time you get to Friendship Heights at 5:20, the bus that, the Merlin bus that I have to catch is pulling out of the station.
Okay. I mean, one of the many ways that we, one of the ways that Metro looks at, you know, making schedule adjustments is, I believe, they track customer complaints. Have you, have you called it in to the customer service number?
No, because when I saw this online, I said, well, you know, I'll just come here.
Okay. No, that's fine, too. I mean, that's just an additional opportunity. I can pass this along to bus planning. We do, you know, we adjust our schedules about twice a year, once at the end of December usually, and then at the end of June. That sort of that a lot of factors go into it in terms of, you know, scheduling bus operators and that kind of thing. But one of the ways we monitor ridership and crowding and that kind of stuff, but for sort of, I don't want to call it a one-off because that's not exactly right, but for things that Metro may not see, you know, like there's no good way for us to know that you're missing your connecting bus. You know, we know when buses are late, right? We can tell if a bus doesn't, you know, that your bus doesn't make it to Friendship Heights on time, but we don't necessarily know the effect that has, i.e. on you missing the bus to Bethesda or whatnot. So that is a recommendation to, to call it in to let our customer service folks know. I will pass this along to our bus planning staff that, you know, maybe there are some possibilities for schedule adjustments to be made. Right. I mean, if it's, and I would then say definitely if it's more than, you know, if it's more than just yourself, you know, if it's a couple other people that have the same issue, I would also encourage them to call it into the customer service line so that they can know, like, hey, this is a problem for more than just one person, that might merit us changing our schedule.
This is for in line, because on the weekend, when I have to work on the weekend, which is Saturday and Sunday, I have to catch the bus from Georgia Avenue to Silver Spring. The bus that pulled out at 5:08, it barely had any people up there. And the next bus that comes, which is from about 5:30-something, it's not going to get me to Bethesda on time at 6 a.m.
Right. So this is the Saturday. This is the E4 on Saturday.
It's the E4 Monday through Friday, and it's the J2 to Montgomery Mall on Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. And
thank you in particular for attending an evening meeting when you're catching a bus that is in.
Yeah, apparently when you're up apparently at 5 a.m. every day, but stick around, so, or just leave me your contact information so I can hook you up with our folks in bus planning, and we can at least let them know that this is an issue. I know I've seen you know, like when we put out schedule change brochures, I've definitely seen things like in order to improve connections to, usually it's with a particular train, but, you know, in order to improve connections, we're adjusting the schedule by a couple minutes. It's certainly not unheard of. Yeah, the
taking into consideration the time, I will ask to see if anybody has any announcements that they want to make for the good of the order. Now we're a quiet group. Okay. Then one thing that I'll just leave out there for us to noodle on, we won't go into any discussion about it tonight, but one thing to consider for when we do become a full-fledged group again who is no longer on probation or in limbo or whatever we're calling our current status, we will be putting together work plans of some kind for whatever committees, and who knows what the committees will be when we're finally done with this, if we're ever done with this. But we will be almost certainly putting together some sort of work plans. So start thinking about some of the issues that we would want to bring up to WMATA Board. They will certainly have their own opinions as to what they would like us to be working on and what they want to hear from us about. But something to consider and for future discussion. Deb and Paul.
Just real quick, did you have a chance to go to the board meeting, this last one, and if so, was anything discussed about us?
No. Yes, I did go, and no, no particular discussions about us. All I know is that we are waiting. I have been told that at the last RAC meeting, Christian Dorsey came and gave us an update and indicated that he would have a little more information for us as of the last board meeting, which was April. I've lost track of my dates, but it was in the past. That did not happen, and I since ran into him at another event, and he said, we have not forgotten about you, but the RAC operational review has been requested to be, I've been requested to not give you any further updates yet. So I don't know when we will be expecting further updates. I don't know exactly why he was told to hold off.
Thank you.
Who voted on it? They have approved the fact that there is an operational review underway, at least in theory. It appears to have sort of stalled. I don't know where things stand from the board perspective. No, it definitely doesn't. There's nothing about an end date on it. It's just, and there's not really a resolution.
No, there wasn't. I mean, there wasn't there wasn't a vote.
It's just kind of an announcement.
So it's not official then, is it? Isn't it?
It came from on high, so it. I mean, it is relatively official.
It's important, but I don't know if it's.
Yes, the board has decided to undertake this operational review through the Business Operations Committee, and it. It is happening whether we want it to or not, so.
It is.
It's happening. Rebecca?
Has
Please invite her.
And it also might be effective if we invite, not at the same meeting, but also invite the head of transit police to come and just kind of so we can understand sort of all the aspects.
So they can learn more about what
perhaps,
the opposition thing.
Perhaps.
I don't know. It's always good to
learn
from
about each other, but you know, where they're coming from.
I think the general consensus is that that would be of interest. So if for the June meeting, I mean, given we have nothing in particular on the June agenda.
So I'm going to invite the ACLU and then we're going to put it out on Twitter.
So what kind of...
I'm trying to read John's forehead here.
Yeah, time gets crazy too. Metro Ford? Metro?
Smarter
Growth?
Yeah.
Smarter Growth. Amy Custis? Was that?
Yes.
Does that cause you a lot of heartburn?
Well, it does. That's not important. I guess my question, at least, I mean, you know, the RAC is welcome to invite whoever it wants. I guess the question is what issue before the board of directors that you all would be providing advice on? Is it that you're trying to advocate for? And I don't, that's more of a question, and that's just more of a, it's more of a rhetorical question than a question I'm expecting, like, I'm expecting somebody to answer right now, but.
I mean, it does say in the bylaws that the RAC will solicit the public to attend and directly address the RAC on any item on the agenda. So if it's on the agenda, I feel like
Bob?
We can do it. So.
By the way, I'm not opposed to your idea at all. I just think in terms of, shall I say, protocol and politics, we might want to have the Metro Police Chief here first.
All right.
Try to invite people, generally speaking, who are, most of our speakers are moderate people.
Yeah, but that's not
a rule, right? I understand, but we usually want to hear their, we want to know what WMATA's opinion is first, before we go out and look for somebody who would, you know, who would object, you know.
It might be a little more politic to do with that.
Yeah, I don't feel strongly, but I don't personally feel like the order necessarily matters, because I mean, or even if they're in the same room, because I feel like both will be respectful of the other's opinion. But
I think that we should be aware.
Okay.
Well, that gives us a little something to work towards, given that we are still in our limbo status until we can start being a full-fledged rack again. Anything else that anybody wants to bring up?
All right. Mm-hmm.
Sounds okay. Good. Then I will end us by basically saying get out of here, everybody. Go enjoy what is a gorgeous night. Any opposition to adjourning?